Let me bang you.
I do let you bang.
Hey, let me bang you, Jamie, man.
I let you bang. I let you bang.
Greetings, Marys and Virgins.
Go for Jesus. No, for gay Jesus, people.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for your favorite mixed martial arts podcast. Recording out of Los Angeles, California, it's MMA Roasted with Adam Hunter.
Who the fuck is that guy?
What's up, people? Welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me. I'm here with the brown belt engineer. Bill Dawes, which is awesome, and it's going to be a fun show. We got Corey McKenna, who's the first girl from Wales to make it to the UFC. It's pretty good. That's, like, amazing. You know,
isn't there a UFC Welsh fighter, too, that we had on the podcast recently?
Yeah, there's a lot of – yeah, we've had a bunch of people from Wales, but first female. Female from Wales. How cool is that? Like, and she started powerlifting when she was 15 years old. I have so many questions, like, started training when she was 10. But she's like the sweetest girl. Like, I met her, and first of all, she looks like she's like, you know, 15 years old. She looks like she's like a child. Not a child, but like, you know how girls have, some girls have like a baby face. She looks young.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, teeny too, right?
Yeah, she's teeny, 115, but she's a little badass. Like, holy shit, is this girl a badass. And throws hard. Like, a lot of times girls, you know, a lot of fighters in general, they have the 1-2, but they don't come back with the left hook. And this girl has a fucking mean left hook, as well as Jay Haran, who last week stood us up. But this week, it's going to be good. Yeah, meanwhile, I'm like working with this guy. We're helping this guy write, who's like a really big deal. He's working on a show, and he hired me to do punch up, and everything's great. But we're supposed to do yesterday at 6 o'clock, and I got to take my kid to Paw Patrol at 3:45, right? I'm like, oh, how am I going to do this?
What, you have to pick your kid up at Paw Patrol?
No, I got to take her to the movie Paw Patrol. I promised
that's
her.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal.
We've already seen it, but like the thing is, she hurt her ankle last week. She hurt. I wasn't home, but she rolled her ankle and had to go to the hospital. Took X-rays. She's fine, but she's been limping a little bit. So I'm taking her off soccer this week and gymnastics, and like so now I'm like trying to find things to do that don't require physical activities. Cause it's getting better. You could tell, but she doesn't know. She's like, yeah, she knew exactly where it hurt. That was the problem. So then I got to tell the guy like, hey, can we move it 15 minutes? Cause so now here I am and I'm working with this guy who's like, it's great. And all of a sudden I had to clean my bunny cage because we have like a walk-in chicken coop bunny cage. So we put these like hay on the bottom. Anyway, so I tell my wife before she leaves, hey, the bunny cage is, it's gated open. It's open, but make sure you lock it because the bunnies can get out. Lo and behold, I look over, like my cats are having like a stare down outside with the fucking three. It's the three bunnies versus my three cats. Like it's like West Side Story. So then I have to like, I'm like, I think my bunnies are loose. And the guy's like, huh? And then I like, like have to pause it for 5 minutes and chase my bunnies around. It was fucking crazy.
Killed by the cats, right?
No, the bunnies got in, but like my next door neighbor has chickens and one of his chickens got eaten by a raccoon or a possum or something.
Yeah.
So he tore down all his fence. So now they could see each other's yards. And then my wife's looking at buying a new fence. The whole thing. Anyway, how are you?
I'm good, man. Not nearly as dramatic in my life.
Meanwhile, then last night I had a marijuana show, like the show, it's like a show you did. Where it's like at a studio and is sponsored by dispensaries. Like the hottest women now have like, a lot of these beautiful women have figured out that like if they smoke weed and post pictures of them on Instagram,
boom,
they're making money because marijuana, these people, they can't like put advertisements. They can't have commercials on the radio or on TV. You go to Instagram and then directly, they could figure out how many people came from this person's code, yada yada. So,
I know you're not like a sexy woman, but have you thought about advertising weed on your Instagram?
I mean, I only have 22,000 followers. I probably wouldn't be against it, except for the fact that I coach a lot of kids wrestling, and I'm not sure I want them to see that. But
yeah,
I mean, if they see my comedy act, they've seen 10 times worse. I went on the Tonight Show and said I smoke a lot of weed. So in one of my jokes, so it depends how much, really, probably.
Yeah.
So anyway, so last night I do the show, and it's the same crowd every 2 weeks, and I'm hosting it. So I got to come up. I'm sitting here at Paw Patrol thinking, what jokes have they not heard for the past 19 shows? And I'm like writing them down. And then I go, and they're like the friendliest crowd ever. It's like hot girls with smiling faces because they're high and like bubbly, yeah, and like they, you know, have this new wisdom upon them. So after the show, I'm talking to one of them, and I'm like, oh, what'd you do today? She's like, oh, I did a modeling shoot. I'm like, oh, how'd it go? The other girl's like, yeah, show her the video. She literally put cupcake frosting on her ass and twerked, like at the beach. Like, that was the modeling shoot. And my buddy was like, what beach is that? Like, I'm like, how many cupcakes did you go through? She's like, 200. I'm like, what? Like, the company has like the name of the company has like, sort of, I'm not going to give away the company's name, but it has something. You could see it when you hear the name, like, oh, that kind of makes sense. But
are you advertising cupcakes?
No, nothing to do with cupcakes. But yeah, it's just crazy. Like, that's what she did all day. I'm like, you.
That's modeling today.
So then I took a picture of her and my friend. So I had her phone. So I like posted, I'm like, I made like a note saying, I found Jesus. I'm no longer going to be twerking. And I posted it on her Instagram without telling her. But she saw it and laughed, thank God.
Oh, good. I was about to say. The good thing about performing for a bunch of stoners is they probably don't remember most of your jokes anyway from show to show too, you know?
And they're having fun. I mean, I'm doing a lot of crowd work, I'm like writing new jokes, like excited the fact that they haven't heard these jokes before. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, like they haven't heard these jokes. Like, you know, it's like, it's actually kind of inspiring for me to write the jokes.
That was a fun room, but I got to say, I was really stoned when I did it, but you'd get stoned just from the secondhand smoke there.
Oh, literally. Yeah. Comics are choking afterwards. Like, so one guy threw up based on the fact. Yeah, so that was yesterday, and then I got offers to do a couple cruises again, and when I was single, the cruises were a lot more fun, just because you had a party and this and that, and I mean, you can't hook up with the people that work on the cruise. I mean, the people that like go on the cruise, but you can hook up with the people that work there. Like, they give you,
they're all like dancers, shit. I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, but even that, like, you're always the new guy. So when they had me on the same cruise, it was awesome. But there was so many like fuck ups on that cruise. Like, the break dancers were fucking everybody. The break dancers were like, because they had like the guests, they had this, that. And like one time in Jamaica, the Bahamas, they went skinny dipping with like three passengers at like midnight, and someone stole all their clothes while they were all in the ocean. So they had to go back on the ship butt naked. I was fucking crying laughing, like crying laughing. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy. There was one time there was like 20 Asian girls. It was like four Asian bachelorette parties, and I was dancing with all of them, and they were like, if you go back to our room, you're going to get laid tonight. They flat out told me, like, by numerous. And I had
the old bachelorette party?
Probably by three or four of them. And I had a girlfriend, so I didn't. But I still am like, oh, God. Like, you know, I don't know. Maybe I would have got herpes that day. Like, that's the way I like look at it.
Yeah. Or you could get a call on your phone like, hey, Adam, we have a little baby, Ching Fao Hunter.
That's, you know, that's also true. I worked with one guy who got drunk, right? And he got drunk and he was hitting on every girl. His pickup line was, he'd go up to girls. He was muscular. He was on roids. He'd make a muscle and go, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Like, that was his way. He would go up to girl and it worked. Dude, this guy was so funny. His name is Carl. So one time he got wasted on the ship and he was hitting on this girl who looked like she was 22. And like, he would give out his card. The girl was like 15, right? But she did look older. And his, like, she had like a nose ring and like tattoos. So the grandma found out, and the grandma told the head, and they breathalyzed him. He failed completely. And he got locked in his room and got like flown off the next island we got to. So I had to cover all his shows. So I had to do like 27 shows that fucking week. And then I was sneaking him Ambien underneath his door because he couldn't sleep. So it was, what a fucking disaster. So, but This guy was such a clown. We had to do kid shows, right? 30 minutes G-rated. So he would start the show by telling the kids, like, hey, I want you guys to move these couches over here. I want you to move this chair over there. Guys, do me a favor, put that table over there. And he would waste 20 minutes doing that. Like, people didn't realize that was part of the fucking character. Anyway, Corey McKenna is here. I met Corey in Sacramento. She came to a show. I thought she was someone's little sister. When she told me she was, at the time she was in Cage Warriors, I was like blown away. And you were, I don't know, 5-0 at that point. Now you're 6-1. Murderer. You're like the, like your nickname is what? Your nickname is The Hobbit?
It's Poppins now. Your eye changed it.
But why is it Poppins?
A lot of reasons. I'm British, obviously. Also, but yeah, I'm always babysitting the kids, and he thinks that it suits my character, and he has a lot of puns based off of it as well. He likes to say that I pop people in the face, and
I like that.
Well, yeah. you do pop people in the face. You have a great left hook. Is that your favorite punch?
Probably, yeah.
Oh my God! Your fight with Kay Hansen was a war. I don't know if you watched it last night, Bill, but this girl. So Kay Hansen's another like super young prodigy, like just tough girl, which is crazy because they put two little prospects together. Like they gave you guys like you guys matched up very well, and it was a very close fight. It was I gave her round one, I gave you round two, round three I was giving to her, but there was 1 minute left in the round. The girl was in full she was in your guard, and she had an arm triangle. And all you did was just like bridge and roll through. And then you ended up on top. That was crazy.
Yeah. So I actually had, like, because I've watched this fight a lot, obviously, with coaches and stuff. I had it the other way. I thought I got round one and two, and then I gave her three.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, yeah, I broke my ankle going into the third, so that was kind of rough. But yeah, it was definitely a tough fight. And like you say, like we matched up very well, which is one of the reasons we took it, you know, when they offered the fight, you know, we looked at it, we're like, this is a cool fight. Like, you know, it's two of the top prospects at the moment, kind of like we're going to meet eventually anyway. So I figured it's, you know, it was going to be a tough fight. I knew it was a tough fight. I was like, you know, what better way to start my UFC debut than, you know, right in at the deep end.
Were you worried going to the, like, judge's scorecard?
I hate going to the scorecards. Obviously, my one loss comes from like a controversial decision. So for me, like anytime it goes to the scorecards, like even if I've dominated for three rounds, like I don't like it. Yeah. You know, preferably would like to get those finishes, and I do always aim to do so. But obviously, it's like the higher the level competition you're competing at, the harder it is to get these dominant finishes and everything. So I'm never confident with the judges.
Hey Corey, you said you broke your ankle going into the third round.
I did. I tore all the ligaments, but it's easier to say broke.
Okay, yeah. But
how did you even? Is that even like the right way to? It seemed like it was like all heart. Is that the right way to get out of an arm triangle? Just roll the person over.
I think it very much depends. I felt her base was off. Like she had the pressure, going the wrong way, and I just kind of, you know, managed to get that reversal. Obviously, there's many defenses, but I think it's very much circumstantial in regards to, like, obviously where their weight distribution is.
I mean, it was impressive as hell. I was like, wow. It was one of those things where I'm not sure you can even teach that. Like, it was just sort of like you just knew where you're exactly.
Yeah, really strong bridge, I imagine, right? Like a really powerful. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm so used to, like I say, I train with a lot of the guys and everything, so I definitely feel like in those sort of positions, I'm a lot stronger than, you know, than I could, you know, than a lot of other people. Like you say, I've got people on the mats every day put me in those sort of positions, so when I get into a fight, it definitely, you know, especially that adrenaline and everything, definitely feels a lot easier to do stuff like that, for sure.
Now, in the second round, you're on top of her, and she's throwing up, like, looked like it was like a triangle, some kind of rubber guard. And Danny Castillo, your coach, goes, don't worry about that 10th planet bullshit. And I'm watching that, and you could tell the commentator wanted to laugh. He did. He started laughing. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I do remember that. I'm used to hearing stuff like that. Like, so that's a very Danny style thing to say. Yeah, they're funny, but yeah, like Danny's great in my corner. You know, that was my first fight with him there, but he's definitely like kind of one of my main coaches now. He's awesome.
How did you not start laughing when he said that? I was laughing.
It's a very Danny thing to say. So I'm definitely used to hearing stuff like that on a daily basis at the gym. You know.
So do you guys train in rubber guarded art, or you just disregard it in your jiu-jitsu completely?
So I don't train it personally. I think everything, you know, like, you have to respect everything, especially at this level. You know, like, there's different things that work for different people. And I think anytime you know, you don't respect something, that's when you risk getting caught in something. I don't personally think it's like super effective. I think you just have to be mindful of, you know, what you do in those positions and not leaving yourself vulnerable. I think it's one of those positions where a lot of people capitalize on maybe like other people disregarding it, as opposed to it being like a super dominant position, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now, I was trying to find out about you. So you started training at 10 years old.
Yeah.
Did you want to train? Do you have too much energy? Were you a wild kid? Like,
I already picture her dad. Her dad is like an old school, used to get in bar fights in Wales or Ireland. He's a brawler. He fought like this. Am I right?
Is that what happened?
I got military father. He was a runner. Like, he used to run marathons. He actually has like a Guinness World Record and everything for that. Or he did. Someone beat him, unfortunately. But you know, he was a really high level runner. I tried every sport growing up. Like I come from an active family. You know, my mother did a lot of sports as well. And then I was just trying everything. Kind of didn't find anything that I particularly fell into per se. Like, I was competing in sports and stuff for my school and everything, but there was nothing really that I took to. I just liked to stay active. And then when I was 10, you know, my mom was going to karate with my younger brother, and they were doing like the moms and toddler thing. And then one day she took me along. And then I just kind of took to it like a fish to water. So that I did that for a few, like, for about a year and a half. And then the gym introduced like jiu-jitsu, boxing, Muay Thai coaches. So I started training that. And then around 12, I started competing at all of those as well, on top of my karate competitions. And, you know, I turned 13 and was like, well, I'm doing everything, so I might as well just go to MMA. And I moved to an MMA gym.
Yeah, it said you had your first MMA fight at 15 years old.
Yeah.
Is that legal?
Not in the US. I didn't actually know you guys out here can't fight until you're 18, but yeah. Back home there's no we don't really have like commissions and stuff like you guys do, so it's more down to like the promoter and the coach discretion. Fortunately, my coach ran an MMA show, so after a lot of pleading and you know, a lot of puppy dog eyes and like, we managed to find another 15, 16 year old girl that also was doing the same to her coach. So he reluctantly put it on. I know he was very nervous doing that, but their show's had like teenagers on since. You know, there's like some really high level guys that've been on there, like there's a Norwegian kid, John Bedell. Like, he was on there at like 15, 16, I think. You know, one of the lads from our gym was on there at, like, 15, 16. So it's kind of cool to see like how like that had never really been done, or wasn't really that well known of, like, outside of like exhibition and into clubs and stuff. You know, and now I feel like it's been a lot more normalized, and there are a lot more like younger people coming to do it. So I think
you're a power lifter at 15 also.
No, I don't know where this came from. So we were backstage at Contenders and Uriah come back, and he was like, oh, let's turn the sound on the TV, like, I've just done an interview with them about your fight. And then, like, so we turned the sound on, and then they were like, and then all we hear is, yeah, so Corey McKenna's been a power lifter since she was 15, and all of my coaches turned around and went, have you? I was like, yeah. I don't know, I guess.
Yeah, because you don't have, I mean, you guys look very strong, but you don't seem like a power lifter. Like, you don't seem like you have, like, I mean, right?
Well, so I started training full-time at the age of 15 as well, because I finished high school and then decided I didn't want to go on to college, because for us, high school finishes at 16, but I was the baby of the year, so I was, like, just under. And what part of me going full-time, because my dad has a broken spine, so he's obviously very injury conscious. So yeah. Part of the agreement was that I do strength and conditioning, and I make sure that I kind of like take care of everything else. So I started working with Powering Through, which he is a powerlifter, and his gym is technically a powerlifting gym. at the age of 15. So I think they've put two and two together with that.
They could have just asked you, were you a powerlifter? And then you would have actually said no. And then that would have, I was like, powerlifter? I got to ask her about that. Now, your first fight in the contender, you fought Vanessa, I'm going to butcher it, Demopopoulos. She had a lot of, you were the underdog going into it. She was a former stripper who wrote a book called The Stripper Bible. Did you read this book before you fought her?
No, but I did try to buy it for my friend. Apparently, they don't sell it anymore.
Oh, really? Oh, that's hilarious. Now, this girl's like super tall, Bill, and like unorthodox and tough. The girl's tough, tough fighter, but she's like got to have like 4 inches on you. And she's one of these girls that kept falling into guard, and then you would fall on top of her, or she just would like fall. Not even like you would hit her, but she would just like fall, like flop to the guard.
She would jump into guard, basically. Yeah.
Kind of. And I kept, Corey, I mean, she's so much taller than you. It was like a high-level grappling battle for a while, and I was kind of worried about, like, you were going to get caught at all. Were you worried at all?
No. So, obviously, my fighting was the Hobbit, so as you can assume, I'm used to being the smaller person.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think this goes back to what you were saying about the rubber guard. Like, say, like, I'm mindful in those situations. I'm not necessarily worried by it. Because, again, I do think so long as you're smart and you respect the – you know, you respect the position that you're not necessarily in imminent danger. But, she was very tricky. She was strong, but she was very, like, say, unorthodox. So she gave me a look that definitely, like, you know, you do struggle to find outside of that sort of environment. Like the boys aren't sticking their legs behind their heads midway through my rounds. They just can't. So it was definitely a tricky fight in terms of like just getting a different look and like having to kind of figure things out on the fly and kind of just puzzle solve. But I never once felt like in any sort of danger. Like I know there was a few situations where people have been like, "Oh, was that close?" But like that whole fight, I was comfortable. Like I wasn't worried about anything. I was just being respectful to the positions because, like I say, if you do anything stupid, that's when you get caught.
What submissions was she going for from guard?
Bars? I think she went for arm bars, and she did try to throw up some triangles because she's had some triangle submissions. She did do that stupid little TP thing around my ribs. I did actually laugh at that. Like, but other than that, like she threw them up. And she has had submissions in the past, and like you say, she was no slouch. I was the underdog going into that. You know, I think. You know, they've signed her now. I think, you know, they really did anticipate her coming out and, throwing something up and pulling it off. But, I wasn't worried by any of the submissions. You know, you just have to respect them and make sure that you stay calm in the positions and, you know.
Now, were you worried that the fight wasn't going to get you signed to the UFC because they want, like, crazy amazing finishes and stuff and the fight was kind of a lot of grappling heavy?
Yeah, that is definitely the only problem with contenders. But I think because we both showed a willingness to throw down, we both kind of, you know, we did our best. And at the end of the day, like she was at the time, she was the best woman outside of the UFC. You know, I'd already fought all of the best opposition in Europe, and then obviously I'd beaten the top girl in America. Like outside of that, you know, she was in LFA at the time. So. I do think like it was a case of like, well, if I don't get signed, where do I go? And also it helps that Uriah's been on that case for so long. And like you said, there was a lot. Oh.
No, I gotta ask you about this one thing.
Oh. Okay, so I thought it cracked, sorry.
So Bill, during the fight, this girl goes for this, right? This was like, I didn't know this happened. I had to rewatch it last night. I'm like, holy shit.
So you watching this? She slowed down a bit here in the third. Okay. Cartwheel, not even a cartwheel kick, straight up cartwheel.
Yeah, trying to get a little kick at the end there.
Yeah, I think my face says it all. Really, in the fight.
But then you came back with this. That was head kick. That was
awesome. Big kick.
So yeah, but I mean that was the funniest. How do I stop this?
Okay.
All right, hold on.
Cartwheel. Not even a cartwheel kick, straight up cartwheel.
Yeah, trying to get a little kick at the end there.
All right. Now, when she just did a cartwheel for no reason, what's going through your head?
I mean, I looked at her in complete disgust. So I do think my face says it all. Like everyone always laughs. We always zoom in on my face during fights because I always, like, I don't have a poker face. So, like, if I think you're doing something stupid, like, you will see it. Yeah, like, I mean, when I did my pre-fight interview, they did tell me that she had told them that stripping directly correlates with fighting. So I guess I expected her to try to do something a bit out of the ordinary. But I was a little bit shocked that she thought, yeah, I don't even really know, to be fair. I was just like, what are you doing? but hey, she can take a punch and a kick, though. Like you say, she was tough. She has a hard head. Like, yeah, you know, like you said, like, I felt like those kicks I landed were solid, but she ate them like a champ, so.
No, I mean, Paul Felder, though, was like, a cartwheel? Okay. not even a cartwheel kick, just a cartwheel. Like he just said cartwheel, and I was like, I was driving while listening to it, and then I had to pull over and watch it. I must have watched that like 100 times. I'm like, that was the funniest thing. I mean, I haven't seen something so random in a while. Like,
it's kind of like the equivalent of a guy like just doing like a man doing something silly, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a show off move just for the sake of like showing off, right? It's not an actual move.
She like, so I remember seeing her do it. Like I saw her do it in slow mo because I knew she was going to do something a bit like try to show off. And like she was trying to do something. I don't know if she thought the kick was gonna land. I don't know. Like yeah, I was confused, but hey, each to their own, I guess.
No, it was hilarious. I mean, I'm surprised no one made that like a
meme.
Whatever. Yeah, like a meme. Like, cause that was like the funny. I was like, huh? I'm like, watch this. Like, but it was a pretty nice cartwheel. I gotta say, like, it was a good cartwheel. You know, like the whole thing was hilarious. I was laughing pretty hard. Watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Corey, you gotta make that a meme now. You gotta take a little clip of that. Your reaction, just going like with your little shrug.
You're like, okay.
I actually think I already have, so I'll have to find it. My group chat is full of memes, and most of them are me during fights. So,
oh, so funny.
Yeah. But yeah, that should be done. But yeah, I like I it took me years to learn how to even cartwheel. So hats off to her.
Now, did you train with Patty Pimblett? He seems to be all the rage right now.
I've gone up to that gym a couple of times now, predominantly to train with obviously Molly McCann, but I've met Paddy and obviously, you know, been on the mats with him. They're cool. They're a great team, nice guys, good coaches and everything. Yeah, like they obviously did really well on the weekend, so that was super cool to watch.
Did you ever go to SBG Ireland?
Once I was cornering my mum on Cage Warriors.
And your
I
mom? Went.
Yeah, my mum.
She's a fighter.
Yeah.
You didn't want, maybe you wanted to mention this. Are we supposed to know this? Who's your mom? Your mom's, is she in the UFC?
No, she's she had like 3 or 4 pro fights. She's retired now. You know, she's not fought for years. But yeah, she co-mained Cage Warriors for her second pro fight. You know, she lost again another questionable decision.
Yeah, but, you act like everyone's cornered their mom before. Like yeah. This is not like a normal occurrence. Most people don't just say, "Oh yeah, I cornered my mom." So your mom was a fighter, and then she hired you to be the corner person.
I cornered my mother in every fight except for the ones when I was fighting on another show, like in another.
She was
place.
A fighter before you, right?
No, we made our debut on the same cast.
Wow.
Oh.
And you guys, I'm sorry, I should have known this. I Googled you. This did not come up. You would think that, like,
it really come up a lot. You guys searched for it.
No, I, like, read your whole UFC.com article and this. Why didn't we mention that during your fucking fights? That's a pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Never once in the UFC telecast they mentioned that. Did they? Or did I miss it?
I don't think so.
I mean, that's crazy. So you and your mom both won the same night on your debut?
Yeah.
Wow. And then, so did you guys became fighters together? So you did training camps together? So you yep. beat up your mom before?
Oh, yeah. I have like my profile picture for like, for the longest time was me Superman punching my mom like straight to the face.
Wow. I mean,
why'd your mom retire?
Sorry?
Why'd she retire?
So she suffered from a back injury. you know, I'm not taking credit for that, but
wait, so your dad has a broken spine, your mom has a broken spine. Did you just fucking
my family's curse, yeah.
Did you fuck your parents in the back? Is that what happens?
Yeah, what are you, like the problem child? Like what's
what they're happened? Like in your room and I'm like, or up your body lock. I don't know.
So your mom what's your mom's record?
So she unfortunately like let me see. So she won her debut, she lost her second fight.
I'm watching right now with Ella Wu. Ella
she Wu might be 2-3.
She's 2-3. So there's ever been times where you've won and your mom lost in the same card?
I don't think so. But we only fought on the same card a few times. You know, there's been occasions where like I fought and then gone and cornered her. I believe her pro debut. So I went upper weight division and I won the title for my last amateur fight. And then a few fights later, I cornered my mom for her pro debut. So that was pretty cool.
Now, did they ever try to get you to fight your mom?
We did discuss it once. I had a last-minute pull-out, and my mom was like...
What? That would have been great. What did you say?
I mean, that wasn't going to happen, but we definitely joked about it. You know, we punch each other enough in the gym. I don't think televising a mom and daughter doing it would be the best marketability-wise.
Why hasn't Hollywood approached you to make a movie about this yet? A mother-daughter MMA team? I mean, is there any other example of that in MMA?
No, she's like she's so sweet, this girl. Okay, but answer the question, please. Sorry.
So our gym was pretty cool because we had Arnold Allen and his dad also trained with us. So you had like the son and father and you had the mother and daughter on the mats. So it was kind of cool. You know, like Arnold used to corner his dad. I cornered my mom. Arnie's had his dad in his corner. My mother doesn't corner me, but yeah, like it was kind of cool. Like, I think we're the only gym to ever have like that sort of duos in the on the team.
And I like Arnold Allen a lot. He's a really good guy.
I'm watching her mom right now. Her mom is proper fit.
Her mom's out. Well, her mom's probably like 30 years old. so you know, how old is your mom?
She's 41 now.
Oh, she's 41. Yeah. Well, now those like your accent, I can understand perfectly. There was a guy that I had in the podcast. His accent was so fucking far gone, for me at least. The guy, I bought his shirt. He said, "Am I here to fuck a boot?" You know what I'm talking about? He was the first guy from Wales in the UFC. He trained an American Top Team. American Top Team. No, it wasn't John. I like John Phillips too.
Brett Johns.
It was Brett. No, wasn't before Brett Johns. It was a guy. It was Neil Parkey or Pikey or fucking.
Let me look up UFC.
The guy's accent was he could do an American accent to make fun of us, and then I tried to have him do that the rest of the podcast. I'm like, can you do that fake American accent so I could understand.
Not Jack Marshman, no.
No, it was before. No, it was like right around. He got cut, and since then he fought. I think in Cage Warriors a couple times.
Brett Johns?
No, it wasn't Brett Johns. He had the thickest Welsh accent. Is there like places in Wales?
From Wales in the UFC, you've got.
He got like, cut though.
Cut. Yeah. Jack Marshman, Brett Johns, Jack Shaw, Mason Jones, and then me.
That's it.
Pretty sure. So no. Maybe not Wales.
There was a guy and a man. He had a shirt that said, "I'm not here to fuck a boot." MMA.
An Irish guy.
The Welsh and the Irish accent. Can you pinpoint what it is? No, they sound the same, right?
No, but also I couldn't give you like I'm still figuring out my like I can I have to do a Californian accent sometimes when I'm teaching the kids now, so I'm figuring that one out. But yeah, they're all slightly different. Like, people keep sending me Scousers, and I'm like, no one sounds like a Scouser in Wales. But they don't, out here, they just don't hear the difference.
By the way, the pigtails and the bed, it looks like an OnlyFans video is about to start.
Now, what's the deal? Do you have a boyfriend, by the way?
No.
How come? You're in Sacramento, you have a girlfriend?
She broke their back.
Oh, no, okay. I
don't want their back.
You're very, look, you're a great person. You're sweet. You're pretty, adorable. You're nice. You're a fighter. You got your shit together. You coach kids. Are guys approaching you? Are guys intimidated by you? What's going on?
I'm just too focused on my training. I got goals to achieve first, and then I can worry about that stuff afterwards.
Good, good. Now, because it's what's going on. Cause you're like the only girl that survives Team Alpha Male. They all come and leave. Because it was like they all come and then they open up their own gym, or they leave, or they hook up. What's going on? Are you fending them off? Are you telling them, listen, guys, I'm here to fight. Don't try to get in my DMs, kind of thing.
I've known the guys for years. You know, they're some of my closest friends. I don't know. Just
good, good, good. Because you're gonna be a champ one day. Okay.
Yep.
You're gonna be a champ one day, and then when you're the champion, I want you to come back on the podcast. Don't get too big for us. Okay.
Because
you're gonna be never.
I don't get too big.
Hilarious. All right, Jay Haran. We're starting off with Corey McKenna. She's a UFC. She's 21 years old. How old are you?
22.
22. She's 6-1. She's a badass fighter. She's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. I think she's a brown belt in judo, right?
I don't do judo, no.
Yeah, fuck judo. she's a killer fighter. Jay Haran, by the way, was the only fighter to be in the UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, What else? Affliction.
IFL.
PFL. IFL. Were you an icon too? Icon? Bodog?
Is that Hawaii?
Icon. Yeah, Hawaii.
Yeah,
and as well as some kind of prison fight league. This guy's been in everything. now he's an actor. Yeah, he was an actor. He was in with Denzel Washington. One of my favorite,
The Equalizer 2.
He's also in all the Marvel comics. Like, he's in all like those, like Jessica Jones, right? He was in
Daredevil,
Punisher. And he's in the new one movie with about Tommy Lee's life.
Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee show coming out probably next year sometime.
Now, here's a girl. She's going to be a star. She's right there. Any advice from I know that you're you know, in your late 50s. Any advice?
I'm old. Stay focused, stay sharp, stay in the gym, stay healthy.
Yes.
You know, love what you do. Stay happy, too. That's it.
Well, but Jay, how did you become such a successful actor?
We're going to get into that. I don't want to waste any more Corey's time. We're going to get into
Jay Haran.
Corey McKenna. Thank you. Unless you want to stay on. But thank you for everything. You're probably very busy, but you're the best.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Follow us.
Take care. You're good. Thank you, Corey. What's up, guys? Listen, Bill, take a break for one second because it's that time of year again. And all eyes are now turning into football, as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. That's what I'm talking about. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. You get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor contest open now at BetOnline. Listen, people, very, very important. I love football. I'm sure you guys do too. Now, head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 100% welcome bonus. Be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo equals make a bet on the Thursday, September 9th season opener between the Super Bowl champion Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using the promo code NFL100. So check them out now. Thank you and good luck. All right, Bill, come back. What's up, Bill? Should I take out me asking about the boyfriend's part or no?
No, why?
I don't know.
I feel like that's standard. Every time you have a female fighter, you ask them about their relationships.
And I thought I thought I was very light on it, right? I wasn't like...
enjoyed it. She was smiling. She didn't get weird.
All right, good. All right, so, by the way, Jay Haran, it seems like Jake Paul, anyone that, like, fought you, that beat you, even though some of those, the Ben Askren, I still think you won that fight. It's like Jake Paul is getting revenge on your opponents.
Oh, God. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Did you watch the Jake Paul Woodley fight?
No, I saw a couple of highlights. I saw when Woodley hit him with a good right hand, and he was all in the ropes, you know? But no, I didn't, I didn't see the full fight.
So,
hey man, good for Willie making money. You know what I mean? I mean, of course, everybody wishes he would have won the fight and pulled the trigger more, you know, but, hey, at the end of the day, he probably made more money than, you know, any single, UFC fight, you know, maybe a couple of them together.
He made $1 million, at least. I mean, what do you think it is about it? A guy like that, who obviously great athlete, great power, great this, but just doesn't want to pull the trigger. You think it's totally mental?
I who knows, man? You know, we're all outside and he's inside there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, especially against a guy like that that doesn't have the experience. You know what I mean? I'm sure he has great, you know, trainers and training. And, you know, because he has a lot of money. He has long money, so he brings in the best. This is about Paul. But, who knows what's going on in Woodley's head when he gets in there, you know. But we're outside, he's in there. You know, that's definitely a fight he should go in and definitely, you know, be a little bit more aggressive.
There were fights that you had, I thought, like the Jake Ellenberger 2 fight, where I thought maybe – you didn't trust your hands as much as you had in the past, right? Was that something you went through?
Yeah, I felt I could have been a little more aggressive, but I mean, I felt sharp that fight. I felt defensively good. I felt like I was countering good. I mean, Jake is a very powerful puncher. So, you know, you can't just get in there and brawl with a guy like that, especially with 4-ounce gloves.
Yeah.
I didn't want to make a mistake. So, yeah, I felt I was a little more reserved. But I felt sharp enough to, on my counters and I felt I did more to win the fight. Again, retrospect going back, could I have done more? I'm sure every fighter says they could have done more, you know what I mean? Even on a win, I should have done this on that when they're looking back at tape of the fight. So, of course, I feel like I could have done more.
Dude, I was watching your one fight against the Joker. This was the bloodiest fight I've ever seen.
That was first Goulet.
Yeah, against Jonathan Goulet, right?
Oh, his nickname's Joker. I didn't know that. I thought you were talking about Joker, my man from Tap Out.
I think it's not, but...
Yeah, Bill, he looks like a Joker with the damn hair and all that, for sure.
Bill, this fight, right? So, Jay Haran's killing him. I mean, just fucking taking him apart, taking him down, making it look easy. And I think it was the second round, the guy lands a perfect knee to Jay's skull. When I say blood is everywhere, I mean, it was a faucet. Like, it was on spike. Rogan was like, we're on spike right now. We might not be able to. Like, it was.
Yeah.
And
where was the cut? Was it just right in the center of the forehead?
Yeah, it hit my forehead, but it split a vein. So every time I would put pressure or grab more anything, it would spit out my forehead like a faucet. So it was crazy, man. And it was like one of the first fight nights on. So they didn't know what to do, whether to stop the fight or, you know what I mean? They kept it going. I guess I was doing really well in the fight. I was definitely up.
You're up.
You know, taking him down, you know, had his back. And by the time I got cut, I was just sliding all over the place. Like, I would get his back and slide right off him.
It looked like a Dexter crime scene. Like, could you see?
No, I had to keep wiping my eyes. I mean, yeah, I had no vision. I was bleeding, and yeah, it was just, you know, what do you do?
He's trying to put in submissions, and the blood is getting to get out of the submissions. Like, the blood is helping the other guy get out. And then they stopped in the third, which is like, and you didn't want them to stop it, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, I felt I was up. I could have finished the fight, but,
yeah,
you know, that's not my call, you know? And Stitch actually was in the corner when Stitch worked for the UFC. He did an amazing job on stopping the cut. You know, that's why it kept going. He would put some adrenaline in it. It would stop. As soon as I would stand up and, you know, pretty much throw a jab or touch the guy, it would start leaking again, leaking out of my forehead. So
I felt so bad for you because that would have been your first UFC win, I believe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you were like a minute away. No question you would have won if it was enough.
Hey, man. It's but all good. You can't cry over spilled milk.
No, you can't cry over spilled fucking head. But now,
right?
Now, how light were you afterwards? Because, like, you must have lost, like, a pound of blood. I mean, it was so much blood.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess they say you could lose a lot more blood, you know, to feel, you know, really out of it. But I felt a little bit of it, you know, just from the fight itself, the blood and the emotions. You know, after you come out of a fight, you get that adrenaline dump, you know. So, you know, went to the hospital, got stitched up, you know. Felt worse about, you know, the loss, so not really the injury.
I don't even consider it a loss, to be honest. Like I, because you didn't tap and you didn't get knocked out.
Yeah,
I mean that to me.
30 fights, never tap, never quit. I might have lost, I got knocked out, but I never quit. I was just talking to somebody about that the other day. You know what I mean? I never quit one fight. You know what I mean? I might have lost. The other guy was the better man that night, but I never gave up in any fight, and that's, you know, that's something I hold, you know, to my heart. I like that. You know what I mean? I feel good about that. You're a fighter. You know what I mean?
Well, so, even the fights that you got stopped, you were still fighting back.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Like there was never a fight where you were out cold. Was there?
Yeah. Well, no, there was. I fought Woodley, my last fight.
The last fight.
And he put me out cold. Yeah, out cold. But, you know, so, he's a better man that night. You know what I mean? But for me, you know, you go back to the dressing room. Hey, what happened, bro? You lose a little bit of time. But at the end of the day, if you lose from a knockout or a chokeout, you didn't quit. You understand? Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
but I mean, some of the guys you beat, I don't think people realize, or maybe they do, but the guys you beat, Jake Ellenberger, you beat Joe Riggs, you beat Pat Healy, you knocked out Jason High, Jason Taylor, Rick Hahn. I mean, all A-level guys. I mean, you know, it wasn't like you didn't beat, you know, you beat a lot of really good guys.
I fought great competition, man. I mean, I wasn't, you know, for my career too, I always tell younger guys, like, you know, they ask me for advice. And I say, man, you know, when in your early days, when you're starting, get that experience. Don't try to rush too soon. You know, like I rushed soon. In my fourth or fifth fight, I fought GSP in the UFC. You know, after that loss, it's like I'm still early in my career, but okay, now it's like, now you get to that crossroads. How do I get better? Do I really want to do this? What do I do to get better? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I moved across country to be around guys that were doing it on a, you know, this was their life, so to speak. You know, it wasn't just like a week, you know, a weekend type thing. I need to be around guys that were just already, you know, on the level and better than me, you know. I had a great trainer back home when I was training, but I didn't have the training partner, so to speak. I was traveling different places for training partner. MMA wasn't just under one umbrella at that time in the gym. It wasn't just under one roof. You had to go to, like, I was going to Brooklyn to spar guys in boxing gyms, then headed back to Lynbrook in Rodrigo Gracie at a jiu-jitsu gym. And then my main trainer was Keith Trimble, which was great. You know, he taught me everything. But we just had to go to different gyms for sparring because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't much at the time. You know, MMA was still, like, coming up.
So, Bill, I'm going to give this guy's whole life in, like, three sentences. So, basically, Jay Haran was adopted. His parents legally adopted him at 8, which is, like, what they try to return?
Earlier, baby. Yeah, 8, but I was with them since I was a baby. Right. Yeah.
His birth mom is white. Dad was black. Parents couldn't afford him. So couldn't you know, wasn't ready to have a kid. So he grows up. He becomes a state champ wrestler in New York. Like I remember watching this kid when I was younger. It was like Jay. His name was Jay Hieronymus. So like, you see Hieronymus?
I'm so mad I didn't just keep my last name. It sounds like a straight gladiator.
So then he goes. to Hofstra. Becomes like the top guy. Gets kicked out for selling weed at the time, which is
smoking weed.
Smoking weed.
Smoking weed. Yeah, I was selling too. I was telling too, but I got caught for smoking.
It's covered.
Yeah, go ahead. Proceed,
then,
bro.
So then he's dealing cocaine in New York and running with the Puerto Ricans and just fucking.
Oh yeah, Dominicans, just, Puerto Rican, Colombians,
Puerto Ricans, just crazy. He gets arrested. Yeah. His buddy sets him up. He's looking at like 20 years in jail.
Also, never snitch.
I never
quit in a fight, and I never snitched on anybody in my life. So, and those, I'm proud of those two things.
So he's like, he's looking at going to jail 20 years, right? His mom, his adoptive parents, set up their house for bail. No. So,
you're making the story good. Go ahead.
So, yeah, make the story good. Let him go with it.
I'll let you finish. Bro,
adoptive parents put up their house for bail. Like, this is the thanks they get for adopting this little child. They got to put their thing. So then he's like worried. So now he's worried that like he's going to get the shit beat out of him in jail. So he hires Phil Baroni to train with. Baroni's a fighter. He learns how to fight because he's worried about going to jail, right? Judge comes in. He goes, you know what? You're a fucking punk, but you know what? We'll give you your list one last time. You're done. He moves to Vegas. I got to get the fuck out of New York. All the coke dealers, they have my number. They're all paging me. I got bitches everywhere. It's fucking crazy, right? Goes to Vegas. Joins Extreme Couture. Starts training. Fifth fight. No amateur career. Fifth fight. Fights GSP. Because he beat up GSP like 2 weeks before that at the gym. He's like, he fucked him up at the gym. So he's like, I'll fight this guy. Gets knocked out by GSP. Then he's like, fuck it. Comes back.
That was your UFC debut, right?
Goes on like an 11-fight winning streak in Strikeforce. Keeps calling out Nick Diaz. Supposed to fight Nick Diaz. The big fucking fight. Diaz tests positive for weed. Fucking, he's like, fuck it. Finally gets the UFC call. First fight, and he goes up against Ellenberger. Which was like a boring fight, main event in Omaha. He's got to fight Ellenberger in Omaha.
Minnesota.
Close enough, which is where Jake's from.
Co-main.
Then he's like fights Tyron Woodley, gets knocked out by Woodley. They offer him like not what he wanted to get for his next fight. He goes, fuck this. I'm becoming an actor. I'm done with it. He becomes a stuntman.
Yeah.
Fucking grunt. Shows up to fucking sets. He's not even booked on it. Shows up, he's like, hey, my name is Jay Haran, I'm a fighter, I hear you're a director, I just want to say hello, I got you a fucking donut or something. Like, now, fucking 20 years later, or fucking 10 years later, he's the main guy, they're giving him, he's in a fucking scene with Denzel Washington, he's in all these things, they're throwing him lines, this and that, he's killing the fucking game. His girlfriend, or his fiance, he got married to the first girl, that didn't work out. His fiance, I meet her, right? I go, what do you do?
Married.
Girl. I go, what do you do? She's like, I'm a butt model, right? I'm like, this is a joke. I look in it. She's got 3 million fucking followers. She like the great, her ass. We have a whole Instagram page for her ass. Like, this is all the shit. But she gets mad when I talk about her ass. So I don't know what to say. But she's doing it. So here we go.
That's all right.
Saying that Jay is my hero.
Yo, bro. Honestly, dude. I'm going to hire you to narrate my story. It sounds so much better when you do it. I swear to God. I love it.
Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, we could say that. Yeah, it sounds better how you say it anyway. So, yes, we'll go with that. It sounds great.
I mean, you sound fun. No matter how you put it, it sounds fun.
But you'll never know this, though. He never tells
you. The narrator is great.
He never tells you this. Like, you'll hang out with him for, like, I hung out with a guy for 2 years. I didn't know he was married. Someone's like, yeah, I met Jay's ex-wife. Like, he just he gives you little bits of information when he's like in a good mood or something. But hey, he's also
I got two ears, one mouth. I listen more than I talk.
Yeah, he's one of these guys, Bill, that really doesn't talk much. When he does, he says things that you're like, man, that's fucking that's wise. Like, he just
got BDE. We're talking about BDE right here, man.
Yeah, no, seriously. That's what Joe Riggs said. Joe Riggs said that he knew the fight was lost because he went into the locker room and he had the biggest cock he's ever seen. And then he said, put everyone's cocks together, it was Jay Haran's cock.
Like, stop it. So, relax.
So, all right, Bill.
Pause.
Bill, what was your question about acting with Jay?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, man, I was a huge IFL fan. This is right before I started getting jiu-jitsu. I trained a hands-up academy in New York, and they obviously had IFL team. And I was a huge fan of yours in IFL, man. I thought you were awesome.
Oh, man. Appreciate that.
Promotion. What happened to it? Why did it die so ignominiously?
I wish I knew. You know, I'm sure it was something to do with maybe money, but I know they sold it and did good. I think they sold it to UFC, actually. I know a lot of the guys that were there went to UFC. affliction as well. But it was great, man. It was a life change at the time. You know, I was coming up, and Randy was actually supposed to have a team. And of course, I'm part of Extreme Couture. I don't know what happened with him. He didn't end up getting a team. Of course, probably UFC blocked it at the time. But Boss Rutan got a team, and I got on his team, which was great. And it was great, man. At the time, it was life-changing again because we were on salary. We were on like $2,500 a month, game changer. You know what I mean? At the time, you know, being able to take care of yourself through MMA was still, you know, it was still, you know, wishy-washy. And, yeah, I had sponsors. I had the salary. I bought my first house through IFL. I became ultimately became the champion, the world champion through them. Nothing but good memories. They were good people. The president of the organization, the owners, I always got along with them. They had a great idea. I mean, you know, it's sad that it didn't last. You know, it would have been, if it was around today, I think it would have been big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because people love to have like the city that they root for or the state that they root for combined. Hey, it's perfect.
And then,
yeah, you know, it was great.
About acting, you had a question about acting?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, well, Adam just kind of answered it. As I was saying, you became pretty successful as an actor pretty quickly. But also, how did you make the transition from fighting? First of all, I know when you stop a career as a fighter, it must be one of the hardest things for most human beings to do. But it seems like you did it pretty seamlessly.
Oh, it's so hard. I mean, I get, you know, to answer that question, I get asked a lot of times by, you know, younger fighters and all, how did I do that? The same thing you're asking. Yeah, man, listen, I had an opportunity and I worked my ass off. I didn't just transition and say overnight, hey, I'm going to be an actor or stuntman. No, I put the work in. I got the opportunity. Thankfully, my man Randy Couture, he's been acting for a long time. He introduced me to a stunt coordinator in New York, Johnny C, big time in New York. And, you know, they're like, hey, man, you want to play a drug deal? I'm like, what? Oh, I could do that. I could do that easy. I used to do that. Yeah. But anyway, once I got in the business, again, I'm not a natural actor. I didn't know camera angles, fight scenes, you know, how to dialogue and just emotional, you know, what looks better on camera for me, my characters. So again, I put in the work. It's like fighting. You know, you go to a MMA gym, you got to learn ground. You got to learn stand up. You got to learn wrestling. So it's the similar. I took it. That was my mind frame. Let me just, you know, absorb everything, learn it, and put the work in. And that's pretty much, you know, how I've been, you know, working was just by putting the work in and meeting people and networking. I had to just learn how to network again and meet people and how to talk, you know, because in fighting is different. If you're with the UFC or PFL or any organization, they promote you. You know, they network for you. They'll put your name out there. Oh, you know, they'll put highlight reels together of two guys fighting coming up. Where in this business, you got to promote yourself. You got to get out there and take the meetings. You got to audition. Nothing is given to you pretty much, you know? So I had to learn how to do that, you know? Even, you know, I'm not going to sound dumb here, but even reading like a script, it took me a few hours to get through a script because, out of school, you're not reading as much. And now just doing it so much, I could pick up a script and read it in, you know, an hour and a half. Whereas it used to take me a lot longer. You know, my reading got faster. I'm getting through pages quicker. And that's just repetition.
Now, so, there was one thing you showed me where you're flying through fire. I mean, you must be like 50 feet ground. You know what I'm talking about? That thing?
Yeah, the high fall. Yeah, high fall. So, yeah, you know, I get called for a lot of different things. And, of course, mostly it'll be fighting. That's my background, fighting. A lot of stuntmen or, you know what I mean, or people that are in business are professionals. In other fields, they come from whether it be race car driving, gymnastics, you know, high fall divers, Olympic style high fall divers. So there's really talented people in this business. And when they have a specific job, they'll call a guy in that's pretty much a specific person for that job. You know, rule number one, don't accept a job that you can't do. So, you know, I've trained, and when I did the high fall, I was training, you know, semi-high falls, not as high as I was doing, but I was training, and I felt confident enough to do it, so I did it. But again, most of my stuff is acting, and I'm a guy that does my own action, whether it be fight scenes or car stuff or motorcycles.
Did you go to stunt school or anything, or no?
No, I've done some driving stuff. You know, again, fighting comes up pretty easy for me, but still, it was just learning camera angles to sell the punches. So I had to learn about cameras and angles and what sells for which camera is around me, you know, which way they're filming, just learn that, you know. And then, you know, being an actor, I had to learn. I went to many classes. I still do. You know what I mean? I audition so much. You know, that's like sparring to me. It feels like I'm just sharpening up every time I go in. I seen your audition the other day. You killed it.
I didn't get it.
They should have just picked up the phone and called you. Like, you're the guy.
I know. I was like, no. How many guys when they find out you're a fighter want to tell you like their fight story? Oh, Otomo was at the bar and all the time, right?
Everybody, bro. That goes back to the networking thing. Just, you know, because again, this is not like fighting. You know, in fighting, you could be, you know, yourself. You know, you could be more of yourself because you're a fighter. So the guy you're fighting in 8 weeks, if you have emotions toward them, if you have a problem with them, you could say that. You know, in this business, they're more on edge about fighters because they don't know what they're going to get when you turn up the set. If a director tells you, hey, man, I don't like this, do that, they don't know if they're going to, you know, snap back at them where – you know what I mean? It's not a fight game. It's you know what I mean? Different. You got to be more low key. So as a fighter, I got to be a little more low key, but that's my personality anyway. I listen more than I talk. I don't really jump in conversation.
Jay,
I'm not trying to meet anybody like extra, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Go ahead.
Don't you get sick of all the fake tough guys in Hollywood? Come on, everywhere.
But there's the deal. There is a lot of them. But when they know, like myself, I'm a real fighter, that shit is real toned down. They don't do that. You know what I mean? I've had nothing but great experience in the business.
Now,
you know what I mean?
Back in the day, I heard like Seagal though. Like Steven Seagal would hurt his.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. He beat up his guys. He beat up his stunt guys. And that's a dick move because these guys are all there to make you look good. You know what I mean? They make you look like a world beater. So you intentionally beating this guy's up, that's not cool. You know, that's a dick move.
Has anybody tried that on you?
I had one guy that clipped me, and he was known to do it to other people. And I pulled him to the side, but the stunt coordinator, my man Keith Willard, ran in and grabbed him and told him off and all that. So it was pretty much I forget his name, and I'm not going to drop his name. But the guy knows who he is. I saw him after we spoke. And he was so apologetic. His eyes looked like they were about to tear because I was just like this. I'm just talking. I'm like, yo, man, like I told you, I'm going to make you look good. You don't have to fucking do anything extra. I'm going to make you look great. And he still ended up hitting me in my nose. And also he hits like a fucking, like a fly, like I was swatting a fly on my nose. It was like, and he directly hit me in my face. I'm like, bro, really? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It happens sometimes, but a lot of them are cool. And a lot of them, you know, don't mean it. And that's okay. Because a lot of times we're paid to come in to take a little bumps and bumps and bruises. That's okay. We get paid good for that. That's
now,
fine. Intentionally doing it, that's something different.
Now, you went up against that girl in Daredevil who was like the hottest Asian girl, right? Who was really good.
That was Iron Fist.
Oh, an Iron Fist. The hot Asian girl in Iron Fist.
Yeah, she was great. She worked the ass off for that fight to make it look good.
But she's
was
like 102 pounds or something, and you're like probably 190. So how light do you have to go to make it look realistic where you don't want to hurt her, but at the same time you want to make it look good, yada, yada?
I mean, you know, most of the times they have doubles. So, again, the girls, that are stunt girls, their reactions are good and they're trained and they know how to fall and take hits. And, you know, you could be a little more physical with them. So, you know, again, if it's, you know, people on the level, it'll look good. You know, sometimes that the actors can do certain things. They can't do everything because it's like insurance. They're insured. If they get hurt, the movie shuts down. Time is money. So that's why a lot of people think, oh, they're pussy. They don't want to do it. But no, sometimes it's just they won't let them do it. Like, again, a guy like Tom Cruise, I respect him. He does a lot of his stuff. He'll ask his stuntman, hey, can I do this? And they have a good connection. And the guy will go, you could do this. He'll do it. So, yeah, he does some wild shit.
Now, was Denzel always in character?
Always. My man didn't talk to me for a few hours when I got in the car. We were in the car. It was so tight, and he was already in character. He was McCall. Wow. He wasn't Denzel. So he really didn't talk to me. Again, so my the way I am, he saw I wasn't even trying to bother him. It was even awkward in between takes because it was silence. Like, yeah. We both sitting there quiet. I'm like, I'm cool. If you don't want to engage in conversation, I'm cool. Yeah. That's cool. If you want to, okay. But I get it. I get the process. Everybody has different process. And, you know, he likes to be in his mode. All good. So when he really started talking to me, we start the fight scene. And, he, you know, he's going hard. And he elbowed me once. And he didn't stop character. He stayed in. But after the take, he's like, yo, you good? And I was like, let's go. Come on, give me more of that. And after that, he loved me. Yeah, he after that, it was like, you know, he was telling me stories about Glory and everything else. It was wow. A gem, man. It was good.
Did he ask you about your fights and stuff and what you did? And
yeah, no, he knew I was a fighter. He didn't bring it up too much, but he did bring up, oh, he had dinner with the Gracies before. And, you know, he bring up Broad. He knew I was a fighter. A lot of times when I get there, if I got the role already, they already know my back, you know, my background or my backstory. You know what I mean? So yeah, he knew that. And, you know, again, I let him bring up anything and talk. And after that, you know, he was pretty conversational, engaging in combo. And then when he was in character, he was in his mode and all good. I knew, all right, he's back in his joint. Boom. I leave him alone or I would, you know, wait till he, you know, he wants to conversate about anything.
Now,
good experience, though. Great experience.
I heard a funny story. It was you, Randleman, Baroni, and... Was it Mike Pyle?
Oh, God. No.
Honor?
It might have been Pyle. No, it just was me, Baroni, Coleman, and Randleman.
Okay.
So that was it.
You guys are fucking, all
bar. Yeah. Right? Yeah, and they're twisted.
And then somebody was
we're
like.
Leaving Treasure Island.
Yeah, you guys getting
we're leaving Treasure Island Casino. Some gangsters are walking in, talking shit, starting shit. And, you know. I'm already, since I've been a fighter, I'm trying to, you know, de-escalate shit, bro. I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to fucking beat nobody up or get in a fight and get sued. I got no time for that. Plus, at the time, I'm training for a fight. So the last thing I want to do, I've been sparring probably all day. Anyway, but I'm with nutcases. I'm with fucking Maroney, Coleman, and fucking Randleman. Are you kidding me? And I'm a wild one, and I'm the one like, yo, guys, chill. Come on. Anyway, we get into these fucking gangsters, cholos, real gangsters coming in, talking shit. But, like, there was four of us, but there was more of them. We're leaving the casino. Fucking Randleman, I don't know what they said, but he started getting ticked off. And you ever seen Randleman go get emotional? It gets crazy. He's fucking sweating and fucking just ready to pull his shirt off and shit. But it kind of de-escalated a little bit. So I don't know. These guys kept going, but we kind of was leaving. We left outside in front of it was like a valet. Sure enough, these assholes come out. Next thing I know, Baroni fucking goes up straight right to one of these dudes. He was sleeping before he hit the floor, bro. He fucking was unconscious in the air as he was falling. His head, it sounded like a fucking coconut fucking just fucking split open on the floor, bro. I was like, oh, he's dead, bro. Anyway, yeah, we fucking took off, and that was that.
Well, what I heard was Baroni's Randleman, Elizabeth Randleman, told me that one of the guys grabbed her ass.
And yeah, it might have been that, yep.
And Kevin Randleman was like, no, you're not fucking grabbing my wife's ass. So the guy goes, they were out there, and he goes, I'll give you two punches. Randleman goes, I'll give you two free punches. After that, you're getting fucked up. And the guys were looking around, and they start noticing you guys all have cauliflower ears. And they're like,
yeah.
Oh, shit, that's – and then the guy's sitting there, like, ready to punch him, but he knew that, like – and then Baroni was behind Randleman, came around him, and just knocked the fucking guy out. And he goes
–
and then he goes – to Randleman, well, you said two punches. He goes, no, I meant he was going to give me two punches, not you.
Yeah, I think it was still early enough where people might not have catched the cauliflower ears like they do now.
Yeah.
It was like mid-2000s, somewhere in there. And, yeah, like 06 maybe, 07 the latest.
God.
But people still weren't up on the cauliflower ears like they are now.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, these guys were fucking, you know what I mean? It was a fucking disaster, dude.
Were you guys
this
laughing?
This guy was snoring. Yeah, we were fucking, bro. We walked off like fucking Wyatt Earp, bro. Like some outlaws, like dudes sleeping. None of the rest of them wanted any problem after. They were all like eyes wide open, like deer in headlights, dude. They were like, okay, we're done. Yeah, they picked their guy up and walked in.
Now, I also heard that, like, because I remember Ngannou and me became friends. He came to my comedy show, and he offered me, we were at a fight, and he kept trying to give me his ticket to sit next to him. But I had to leave, so I gave it to you. And then you sat with Ngannou in the front. And then you told me, I'm like, you guys became friends after that. And you said you sparred with him one time.
I wouldn't even call it sparring. I thought we were drilling. I would never spar this guy. I thought we were drilling, and it was pretty much drilling. Well, semi-sparring. I mean, you know what I mean? I thought he would, the weight difference, he would have been like, okay, this, you know what I mean? Yo, bro, he kicked me once, and I looked at the clock. I felt I thought it said 4:59. That's how much left I had. Like, I don't remember the exact time, but it felt like there was the whole round left. I was, like, circling shit. God. I'm like, bro, what am I doing? I'm already retired. I'm like, yo, I will never do this again. Mental note. Do not spar this big motherfucker. But, again, I don't even think he was trying to hit me hard. He's just so dense and big and strong. He probably was just throwing it, like, half speed. And fucking, you just feel like he has that thick, dense bones, like, and he's fast, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that was fun. And mental note, don't do this again.
And then last question. So this week, Vitor Belfort is fighting Evander Holyfield. And Donald Trump is doing commentary.
Wow. incredible times.
Who do you think wins?
I don't know. I love Holyfield just from all the fights he's given us in the past. Also, Vito is a legend in the game. You know, I've trained with him, you know, so a few fights. He's always sharp, and he hits hard, Vitor. I mean, you know, he could – Holyfield's old, dude. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't see how, you know, we'll see the old Holyfield. You know what I mean? He's a real boxer, but Vitor is the younger lion in that jungle, if you want to put it that way.
Did you train with Vitor?
Who?
Did you train with Vitor when he was on TRT? Like the?
No comment on that. I don't know what he does when it's off time, but every time I trained with him, he felt sharp, fast, and strong as fuck. So,
wow.
But I don't know whatever he was doing, what do people do outside of the gym, but yo, he was always, every time I worked with him, man, strong, fast, sharp. You know what I mean? Super, super, super good as a lefty, you know? So it was always good training.
Well, where can people find you?
My Instagram, Jay Haran, Twitter, same Jay Haran. Few projects coming up, look out for that. And
Well, Jay, thank you, man.
Mostly my Instagram. I post upcoming stuff.
I love you, brother. I'll talk to you
soon. Love you, bro. I like the crib, bro. I see behind you, man. Looking good.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, Jay. Thank you.
All right, bro. All right, guys. Later.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was Jay Haran. Nice guy.
He's great. He seems like he figured it all out.
Yeah. You know, and he's a humble dude. Like, he's one of those guys that, like, always been humble. Like, never, like, he's the same dude. Same dude that, like, I knew, you know, 20 years ago. And, like, just a nice guy. Like, nothing fake about that guy.
So, big him.
But what do you got coming up, Bill?
What do I got coming up? What do I have? What do I have coming up? I have a cannabis show. No, I'm kidding. I have, I have some shows here in Austin, the Sunset Room, ATX, and then next week I'll be at the Laugh Factory.
Nice.
Wednesday and Thursday.
I think I got a gig for you in Lansing, Michigan for the week, too. I'll hook you up with that.
Yeah, man, that'd be great. I also want to do Off the Hook one day.
You've been there, right?
I've never done it. I keep hearing about it, yeah.
Oh, okay, no problem. I got you those. All right, listen, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Corey. You guys are the best. Take care, brother.